You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. This is the American Hour, and it's on the USA Talk Radio Network. You can also find us on Blog Talk if you look for USA Talk Radio. You can follow us on Facebook, and please go click on that like button. We need more people to do that. I know there are a lot of people. I can tell how many people have been there to the site, but they haven't all clicked on the like. And I don't think it's because they don't like us. I think this is just a lot of people don't realize it helps to have that like button clicked and the numbers go up. But look for the American Hour Radio Show page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter at the American Hour. And also, Paula, you can follow on Twitter at the Megawatt Queen. Or is it not the Megawatt? It's just Megawatt Queen, correct,
Paula? That is correct.
Okay, so, yes, and I am back from the future. If you've been following us the last week or so, we've been talking about a wormhole that I found, and, of course, you got to understand there's a little bit of exaggeration here, and this is for humor purposes, but it's going to make some very important points. But on one of my flights, I found a wormhole and was able to go to the future and take a look at future legislation up through 2030, and you're going to be surprised at some of this stuff. It's not going to surprise you as I read the legislation and the high points of the legislation. It's going to fall in line with things that have been happening the last few years, but overall, it's quite shocking, and it's something that we have to address. And we also have a special guest that's going to be on here today, Karen Schoen, and I hope I pronounced her last name right. We'll bring her on in just a second. So what we'll do is, just to give you a little bit of a tease about what the Back to the Future thing is going to be, I may have put some of this out before, but on March 4th, 2014, Congress passes H.R. 4590, the Healthy Life and Affordable Food Act. Sounds kind of cool, right? It's 3,800 pages long, but I do have an executive summary. We'll go through that. And then there were some lawsuits that were filed by the states. And we have some other legislation, the American Equality Act, and we'll get into that, and other legislation and other judicial rulings on this legislation, all culminating with the People's Choice Act. Sounds good, doesn't it? Paula, don't all these bills sound good? You know, three of them were from the House of Representatives, one is from the Senate. And then we'll talk about what the liberal response would be to this. Oh, Tom, no. But that's what we're going to get into, so stick around. You're going to enjoy it, and you can always come back and download it and, you know, play that for your friends, because it really is some insight into the future that we need our folks, our friends, our neighbors to understand, and I think I'll help you explain this to them a little bit better. But in any case, Karen, let's bring Karen onto the show here, and I bring her mic on twice there. Okay, Karen, welcome. How are you doing today?
Hi, Tom. I'm fine, Tom. How are you? And thank you so much for inviting me on your show. I really appreciate any opportunity to get this important information out to people.
Absolutely. And we have to give Dick Bierenbach credit. Dick is here with us also. Dick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you, Karen?
I'm great, Dick. How are you?
And Karen, you may not know, but my co-host Paula Lozon Osman is with us today, the lovely Paula from Boston. And Paula, say hi.
Hi.
So we're all here having some fun. And I'll give a little bit of your background, but you can fill in where I make any mistakes or miss anything, Karen. But you're going to talk to us today about Agenda 21 and focusing on the education aspect of it. We've had Sid Prescott here, and we've had some other folks on the show to talk about education as well as Agenda 21. And it's been coming up more and more frequently. I'm seeing more of the Tea Party / Patriot / 912 groups out there that are discussing it more and digging into it and finding out what's going on at their own local community and how they can stop it, and it is working. You know, Glenn Beck the other day gave a little rundown of the communities across the country that have basically shut down any form of Agenda 21 going on in their county. But, you know, using Agenda 21 to indoctrinate our children with anti-American propaganda And your background, retired teacher with a master's degree in liberal studies. You're involved with the Panhandle Patriots. You do a radio show of your own, American Freedom Watch Radio, on Repatriot Radio. I'm familiar with them. I've been on there before. And you contribute to, I guess, blogging and some other things to Agenda21Today.com, RedCountry.com, Bear Witness Info. So tell us a little bit more about yourself, Karen. Also, tell us right up front how people can find out more about this, how they can find out more through you, find out more about you, get in touch with you, whatever it is, and then give us a little synopsis of what you want to discuss today when it comes to Agenda 21.
That's my pleasure. The best way to get in touch with me is on the Agenda21Today.com website, and I suggest that people go there and sign up for our newsletter. There's also a section for them to email me. I'm a real person, and it's kbshone@bellsouth.net, so I don't want anybody to think that this is a fictitious bit of information. But we send out newsletters, and we have been putting together conferences throughout the state of Florida. We will be bringing our conferences online, and we will be having online seminars to bring people up to speed about Agenda 21. This program, folks, is not new. It's actually, if you go back in history, it's more than 100 years old. But to do a fast forward and give people a general idea, in the 30s, just before World War II, when Hitler started purging the universities of those people that he did not like, they came to America. Isn't that nice of them to do that? So they brought their socialist ideas, and they were educators, and they went into our colleges, and they began to teach the Marxist-Leninist approach, which began to infiltrate our colleges. Now, it wasn't a large group of people. It was a smaller group of people, but they nonetheless did a wonderful job. Then let's fast forward to the 60s. And let's remember the time of the 60s. President Kennedy, who was presented as the savior with Camelot, and he was going to take the country and make it into a wonderful, magnificent country, and I honestly believe that he had that intent. Unfortunately, as we all know, he was assassinated, probably by the same people that are putting this together, because he did have that intent. And then, right after he was assassinated, we were thrown into the Vietnam War. Now, taking a look back at our parents shielded us at that time because one of the things that we learned was not to talk about politics and religion, and they wanted their children to have the best of everything and shielded us from a lot of the things that were happening. So our group of kids went out and we became the liberal, anti-war, anti-family, anti-religion, anti-everything that you could possibly think of, we were against. And we learned to do that, and we learned to rally and to march, and we marched on Washington and all over the place, anti-Vietnam War, anti-anti-anti. As the Vietnam War began to progress, one of the things that was put in place was a draft-exempt position called teaching. So if you wanted to become a teacher, you didn't have to go to the war. Well, all of us, anti-everything, became teachers. And what did we do? Because we were anti-American, we locked onto this Marxist, communist agenda, and we bought into it. And we started going to meetings, and we learned how to indoctrinate people, how to get them to join, how to lie to them, how to tell them all kinds of wonderful nonsense, and create this utopia, which could never be achieved, through a communist approach. And what happened was, after the rallies, they wanted riots. And that was when I said myself, wait a minute. I'm not going to do that. This is not me. This is not who I am, and I love America, and I'm not going to do that. I remained a teacher, but I didn't buy into the next step, which was the rioting, the SDS, and all of that. I said there's better ways to do that than rioting and being destructive. However, we were teachers, and what were we teaching? We were teaching a lot of this Marxist communist ideology, and this was in about the beginning of the middle of the 70s. From the 70s to the 80s, we began, or we continued, teaching this mantra, which then became more of a conceptual learning, not fact-based learning. This is what we have in our schools today. And this is what we have, which is a continuation of this. And it's right now in two programs that are targeted at our youngest, are our brightest students, and they are called the IB program, and that's the International Baccalaureate. That comes out of Switzerland. And we then go into the AICE program, which is the Advanced International Certificate of Education, and that comes out of Cambridge. And if you do a little research and digging, you will also find out that those are backed by all of the big liberal groups, of which George Soros, Open Society, Bill and Melinda Gates, Bill Clinton, all of these big liberals are behind these programs. And these programs were sold to the Department of Education, Federal Department of Education, and wound up in our schools. And now they have been promoted, because they're so wonderful, into Race to the Top. So what's going to happen is our children will no longer receive an American education. They will receive an anti-American, anti-family, anti-Judeo-Christian, anti-free market family based solely on the propaganda of the Marxist, socialist, communists who are now controlling our educational system. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, yeah. Excellent. Wow.
The worst part of it is that when you looking at this and seeing this information and hearing what the kids are reading and how anti-American it is. I don't know if your listeners have seen a movie called Waiting for Superman, and I love this movie because this is a perfect example of propaganda and indoctrination. The left wanted school choice to be promoted. Now, they weren't going to go out and say, we're the left and we want school choice. They have to go a roundabout way doing it, showing how the educational system is failing, which it is on purpose because the kids have been dumbed down because they're not really learning anything. But they wanted we, the citizens, and the right to rally around this program by promoting school choice. They wanted the right to promote and go after no teacher tenure. And those were two big hot buttons that the right was looking at. And they promoted it through the use of this movie and got the right to buy into it because it looked like such a wonderful thing. Believe me, they're marketing experts. But if you look at that movie, and if anybody has it, go back and take a look at it because you will see a section in there that a daughter is reading to her mom. And, of course, the daughter is reading to her mom, and the mom is saying how wonderful it is that her daughter can read because prior to this she couldn't read, and now she's in this choice school and she can read. That's not what I'm talking about. Listen to what the girl is reading. The sentence says, "And the white man came to America in three ships and polluted the earth, and the Native American was left to clean it up." Those are the kinds of sentences, those are the kinds of concepts, those are the kinds of things that are in our kids' books today.
I don't think the Native American cleaned it up, because if you go into some of these Indian casinos, man, they're full of smoke. And but they are making money off of that. So I don't disgruntle them that at all.
No, this is the type of indoctrination that they're using, because very subtle little hints. Why are they saying the white man? Why was it necessary to do that unless you want to divide? And that's the whole goal, is to divide and conquer. You don't want people to come together and be talking about anything. You want to make sure that that divide, why on paperwork is it always necessary to say what race you are? Who cares what race you are? We're Americans. We shouldn't care. Why would you go buy houses? Does it say, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I've got a question for you, and it's about this divide thing. When the president was originally going to make his first speech to our kids, and there was packets put out to the teachers, depending on what grade range you were in, things to go over and get the kids thinking about things and discussing things prior to the president giving his speech. Now, we all know that he had to change up his speech because there was such an outcry of people complaining that, you know, he's going to be, you know, pushing some kind of propaganda versus just trying to be a leader. And he had to have changed his speech up, because I watched his speech, and it really went nothing along the lines of these packets that were put out to the teachers. Now, I don't know if you had a chance to look at any of those packets and if there was anything that stood out to you in terms of propaganda. And I'll bring one thing up, but I'll give you the first shot at if you had looked at it, but you may not have.
I remember reading about it, but I don't remember what it said. But I do remember a book called The Story of Stuff, and that's in a lot of our schools.
Yeah.
And that one is totally anti-free market, anti-business, and it leaves a message that the government is your answer to everything, because that's the European socialist model, and that's what they're bringing here. So our kids are being coached to believe that the government is your answer. They're being told not to talk to mommy and daddy, because mommy and daddy don't know as much as you do. And you can go online and listen to Al Gore and Van Jones talk all about that one. They're being prompted into believing through propaganda all of these items through reading exercises and tests. Just take a second and think about this one. The FCATs, all of the testing information that's given out. When I was in school, we had multiple choice. We had essays. We had yes, no. We had true, false. We actually had math tests where you had to, you know, count and actually come up with a real answer and write the real answer. Today, all of the tests are multiple choice. You are given four choices, and you are asked to come up with an answer. So you get a passage to read, which could be about the white man and all the atrocities that he has done, and then it is being reinforced by the questions. But aside from that, a person is now guided into the fact of understanding that my life is going to be a choice that somebody's going to give me. Well, who's going to give you that choice? It's going to be the government. So instead of you being able to be a free-thinking person and saying you go into a store and you want to buy a red pen and a blue pen and a black pen, you're going to stand there and wait for somebody to give you a choice of which one you should have, rather than saying, well, if I'm going to do drafting, I need a blue-black pen, and I need that pen, so I'm going to go and get that pen. You're not given a choice of a freedom of choice. You are given a choice of somebody else's choices for you, and those choices are the government choices. So freedom of choice is being taken away. We are losing our cognitive thinking. Kids can't think anymore. They can't. There's no logic. There's no reason. And there's no way for them to come to a conclusion. The information that they're getting is given by consensus. So there's four of us right now on this show. If we come together and we decide that sundown today is going to be at 10 o'clock tonight, and we make that determination between the four of us, well, the consensus is then sundown is going to be 10 o'clock. Well, kids, sundown is 10 o'clock because that's what the consensus is. And that's how global warming became global warming, man-made global warming, not based on scientific fact, based on scientists agreeing that man could have a role in climate.
Yeah. Well,
that's the way education is now.
Produced. Exactly. Consensus. Yeah, there was no consensus when I was a kid. You better get it right or you fail.
No, you got it right. Yeah.
Yeah,
that,
and there was a
the
truth
problem.
To it. It wasn't consensus. It was truth. We based our
there
tests on truth.
Truth.
And
there is no truth.
I'll tell you this, Karen. When I went through that packet that was given, and my daughter would have been in the older bracket. My other daughter was graduated from high school at that point. But one of the things that really stood out to me was, and here's what I really want to get at. Before I tell you what it was, I want you to tell me what a elementary age school teacher, what qualification they would have to lead a discussion with children in the age range of, say, around, let me think how many years this would have been, like 12 years old. The question was, ask the students what it is that makes them all different and why some kids are different than others, and then ask the kids what it is that makes them similar. Now, I find it very disturbing that a elementary school teacher with no training whatsoever, most likely, in sociology or, what you would get from going to a marriage counselor or anything like that, is going to lead such a – I mean, you can see one of the kids raise their hand. Actually, you know what it was? It wasn't – I looked at the packet. That wasn't in my daughter's packet. It was in the younger kids' packet. We're talking like first and second graders. Now, you know how free they are with their opinions and things. I could see some kid raising a hand and like, well, Johnny's different than the rest of us because he's stupid, or Cindy stutters, or she's always dirty and unclean. I mean, I could see those things happen, and kids do that stuff. What kind of training does a first grade elementary teacher have to lead that kind of a discussion in a classroom? And also, why would it not be the parents? Because this could really hurt some kids' feelings. It could destroy their confidence. Why wouldn't the parents be notified that we're going to hold a discussion like this without any training whatsoever?
Well, first of all, to them, family is irrelevant. So anything that the parent does is discounted because they do not want the child to rely on family for anything. If you look at the Communist Manifesto and all of those Marxist and communist books, the most important thing for them to do is get the child at the beginning. So if they could take your child the day it was born and put it in an indoctrination school, they would do that. So to them, family is a blight. So that's number one. The other objective is they are guiding the children into accepting gender differences because their goal is depopulation. So if you can promote Johnny to become gay, then he's not going to have kids. If you can promote Sally to become a lesbian, she's not going to have kids. If they don't have kids, that's a way of controlling the population. That's the other reason why abortion to them is so important, because that's another way of controlling the population. So the guidance that they are given is minuscule because the teachers are never really told what the true goal is either. Because I've had teachers since I've been doing this in the last 10 months, I have had more teachers write me emails and tell me, oh, my God, I know what you're saying. I have to teach this to my kids. I don't want to. Well,
yeah.
Again, we go back to if you get rid of teacher tenure, then I can tell the teacher whatever I want them to teach, and they have to do that or they lose their job. So the training on this of why Johnny and Sally are different, of what they're trying to guide them to, is that it's better to be with your same than be different. And that's the underlying goal, is to instill that little, propaganda in the beginning of the child's life that, oh, if you think you're different, there's other kids in the class that are different too, and all of you different kids can group together, and that's why they now have gender neutral has become the big thing. That's part of the Earth Charter, and that's part of Agenda 21. So Agenda 21 has its tentacles in every single facet of our lives today and whatever we are doing, because it's starting in education. And if you train the kid early enough, then it just goes from one step to the next step to the next step until they graduate. And guess what? They were taught. That's why The political correctness and all of that is so important, because having a conversation like this, you and I and the people, you know, in the studio, where we can voice an opinion and somebody can say, no, Karen, I think you're wrong. Based on this, I think you're wrong. Okay, we could have that conversation. They don't want that conversation. The only conversation that they want is, of the four choices that I'm giving you, what choice do you want? Period. That's it. And education through Race to the Top, if you read Mark Tucker's work and Arne Duncan, who's the head of the superintendent of education, they believe that education should be work training. So here's
yeah.
the other thing. Let's say,
Karen, can I ask a question?
Sure.
This Agenda 21, which is part of ICLEI, is all part of a UN movement.
Yes.
According to our Constitution, our states, counties, and cities cannot be involved in anything that is involving the UN. Why can we not use our state powers to force all of this stuff out of the state and end it?
We can, and that should be the goal, and that should be what everybody, every Tea Party, every 9/12 group, any group that has any voice at all should be saying two things. To the federal government, we need to cut off the head of the snake, which is defund these agencies. We have no money. Why are we allowing the EPA, for example, to give $27 million to some foreign country for pollution? Why are we continuing the grant gravy train? So instead of worrying about the budget and cutting entitlements, we should be saying to our legislators, cut all of these agencies, they're unconstitutional, cut their funding. That should be the first thing. The second thing, in the states, we should be saying state sovereignty. If we don't say state sovereignty, then you and I can go out and fight for anything that we want, but we're not going to get it, because ICLEI, the UN, and all of these, they have set up 3,500 non-government organizations that are infiltrating our government organizations and guiding them into making these decisions that will ultimately take the sovereignty of the United States and put it under the UN, under one world governance, which is the goal, period.
You,
so
you are not in
works,
Volusia County, are you?
No. I'm
okay,
in,
we
right
have
here,
a member of the county council that represents the county council with ICLEI. This lady who is the council person has no idea what ICLEI is all about. She has no idea,
exactly,
other than the fact that they're telling her how to buy land, how to do this, how to do that, how to do everything. She has no idea what ICLEI stands for. None whatsoever.
None of them do. None of them do, and they do that on purpose. If you notice, our news today and all the information that we get is like in maybe a two-minute soundbite. They don't want anybody to connect the dots. They don't want anybody to know where this is coming from. So they create programs that have wonderful-sounding names, and nobody is going to go and check because it's a wonderful-sounding name, and who doesn't want to? Everything is based on the environment, so who doesn't want to not save the environment, you know? So what I tell everybody is, when you see ICLEI, you can go on their website. The way that it works is you have the UN that has created this Agenda 21, and then their implementation plan is the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation. Now, underneath this plan, they have the organization called ICLEI, which their sole purpose is to go to different cities. They're international, whether they're, you know, overseas or, but in the United States, to go to cities and to get them, the cities, to buy into this program that is supposed to help save the planet through the environment. So your commissioner thinks she's doing a wonderful job because she's going to help save the planet. In reality, what they're doing is they are going to be rezoning the area, taking land out of private hands and putting it into a public domain, which takes the land off of the tax rolls, put something on it that requires a grant, because they want to tell you that you're getting free money. And then when the grant is over, that land, whatever structure is on it, is now going to be the responsibility of that town to care for it. And if you look at California and Oregon, that's one of the reasons why they're strangling. That's one of the reasons why they're being so inundated with such an exorbitant debt. Because the programs that they put in place, that's the other thing that I wanted to mention. There's really one way to fight them, and you can get them on it every single time. Because the downfall of all of their programs is that they have no financial information. So if you go to one of their meetings, and you know they're going to be talking about ICLEI and all these wonderful programs that they're going to be putting in place, if you just say to them, where is the money coming from? They'll tell you it's a grant. Well, who's responsible after the grant money is dried up? How many jobs does this create? Who's going to maintain it? And what's our return on investment? And if you just ask those questions, they have no answer. And anybody that's in the audience would then see that, wait a minute, you want to put in these programs, and you have not done your homework because we have no idea what our financial responsibility is going to be. So they come and they do these projects. They are financially unsound. And then in the end, their objective is, well, you can't pay for it, so we'll take it over, we'll buy it from you. Boom, now you've lost your land to an entity that is responsible to the UN. And their
goal
is,
it sounds like the SunRail.
Exactly. That is why did they need the SunRail? They needed the SunRail because their goal was to make Orlando and Tampa sustainable communities. And since you're not going to be allowed to use a car, you have to have some method of transportation. And rail is the easiest way to connect cities and use a curfew at the same time. I want all the people in my community, we need all the people to be in their community by 11 o'clock. Okay, the last train is at 10 o'clock. What happens? Everybody's home by 11. So they're putting things in place that will control masses of people. On the other side, they have to depopulate because they can't control that many people. So they're working on plans to depopulate the planet. And then they're putting in place things that, why do you think the gas is so high? If you read the documents, you'll even find that one of them says the threshold in the United States for gas before people will scream is between $3.50 and $4. If you go over $4, everybody will scream. If you stay between $3.50 and $4, people will tolerate it. But what will happen? They won't be able to pay for their luxuries. They won't be able to go to meetings. They will be stuck more in the home because their disposable luxury, quote, income is eaten up by the excess gas. So they know exactly what they're doing, and they know exactly what the thresholds are. And every time we fill out one of those stupid forms and it asks us about anything other than, you know, our name and our address, we are giving them information that they can use to divide us, come up with statistics, and figure out how to conquer what we do. And that's exactly what they've done.
Yeah. Well, Karen, you brought up SunRail. This is kind of a little bit of a side, but I got an email just a few minutes ago from Doug Getzlow, and if anybody's familiar with him, he does the Getzlow Report. He's got a radio network with some other hosts as well. But less about that, the important thing is he sent out a link to the Orlando Sentinel. If you go click on news, then opinion, they're doing a poll of their op-ed or editorial that says, yes, we want SunRail. I'm going to ask everybody out there, go to the Orlando Sentinel, click on news, opinion, and where it says, you know, what do you think about our opinion piece or whatever it is. I'll just go, and that way we can I can tell you exactly what it looks like. But go and vote no. Right now it's about 67% to it's 66% to 34%. It was a little bit better before, but we need to get there. So let's if you go to the opinion page. So news, opinion, and here it is. Sunrail, Republicans and Democrats agree, but will Governor Scott listen? Republicans and Democrats agree? What they're saying is Republicans and Democrats agree that we need Sunrail. And there are some Republicans. They're rhinos. They need to be kicked out of office. But the people don't agree. Just look at this poll right now. And everybody that I knew in Central Florida when I was living in Titusville absolutely was opposed to it. Everybody in Brevard County, they're going to be paying for this, and they get no benefit from it. And we've done other shows on Sunrail, and the bottom line is it will not work. Tri-Rail down south doesn't work. It barely works, but it's a black hole. So go there, click on the opinion box where you can vote, and vote on it, please, for no. We do not want it. Click on the no button. So
and also, I think they had a meeting yesterday, and the head of the department, Florida Department of Transportation, was there, and I got an email, and he even said that this is a black hole, and we'll be paying for it for 99 million years. Who the heck knows? And again, they have no financials. So that's the whole key to everything. If we can understand that and we can get the people to understand, the way to beat them is financial information. They cannot work with factual information. They certainly cannot work with financial information. And their financial information is usually based on information that is at least 10 to 15 years old, because they can't bring anything current because the numbers are so horrific.
Yeah,
there's
Karen,
no
I just
way
got a
chart what they want to do.
I just got a text message. The New Hampshire Tea Party group is listening. It says, tell Karen, New Hampshire Tea Party is listening. And I do recognize that phone number from when I used to live up in New Hampshire.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so good. We're getting the word out. Now, here's something I'm going to do real quickly, just to take a little break from this discussion, because we're going to get to the Back to the Future segment here a little bit later on. But anybody out there can tell me what book this comes from. Is going to get a 5,000-year leap book along with some pocket constitutions to hand out to their friends and neighbors. So here we go. It's a quote, then I'm going to be going through this whole piece a little bit later on. But the Virginia Republicanism, which was in large part the reason Thomas Jefferson got elected president, believed if the government, either in its legislative, executive, or judicial departments, or any combination of them, could define its own powers in the last resort, then its will and not the letter of the Constitution was law. Okay, so if anybody out there knows where that comes from, send me an email, send me a text message, come online. Let's get the phone number for you to call here. The phone number is 310-982-4145. And if you're the first person to tell me what book that came out of, you will get a 5,000-year leap, brand new, brand spanking new, and some pocket constitutions. All right. Back to the Agenda 21 aspect. Now, what aspects when it comes to education haven't we talked about yet? We've talked about, you know, kind of elementary through high school, and I think you touched a little bit on college, but what's the big plan for our universities and colleges, Karen?
The majority of the students that I have been listening to when I listen to things that are online is that they come out of school and they are not prepared for what they are facing in the future, because in school they're being led to believe that they're going to be stepping into this wonderful utopian society where government is going to take care of them. And, of course, we all know as of this moment that doesn't exist, and if we have our druthers it'll never exist. But the kids are not being prepared. They're not being taught economics. They're not being taught civics. They have no idea the way our government runs. They are being taught a European model of government, which doesn't exist in America, but it's the wish list of the elite who want this to happen. So the kids are being prompted into this, and it's criminal what's going on with the kids. It is absolutely criminal that this type of education is being allowed in our schools, whether it is on a college level or whether it is in a traditional public school level. We are failing our children. They are graduating. They do not know how to read and write. You tell me where in college we should be teaching remedial anything. When a kid leaves high school, they should know how to read and write and do math. They should be able to, let's define, education is the learning of factual information and the ability to make choices backed by factual information. As a teacher, I presented factual information. I gave my students a variety of choices and guided them through cognitive thinking skills where they could research, find out, understand what that information was and how it would affect them in their lives. Today, the kids are being indoctrinated. And what that is somebody's values, not factual information, is being taught as factual information. So you can't, that's why you can't debate a liberal, and that's why they can't handle when you say anything other than exactly what they are saying, because they don't have an answer. They can't debate you.
They never have the facts. You know, my dad, when I was a kid, told me, you know, communism was kind of the big topic back then in the, mid-60s. And he said, if you ever have to debate communism, be the communist. Because then you can lie. You can say anything you want.
That's right.
And you'll win the debate.
That's right. That's what we were taught. The ends justify the means, and do anything that you can to get there. And if they, you notice, if you listen to the media, and Chris Matthews, of course, is one of my favorites to listen to, whenever anybody says something that he can't grasp as a fact in his value box, he attacks the individual, not what they're saying.
Now that's an Alinsky tactic right there.
Yeah.
Exactly. So Chris Matthews, man, what, that guy's dumb as a doornail, and he's opinionated as a liberal. He doesn't base anything on facts. And, you know, I hear these guys talk about, like the other day with Michelle Bachmann, about her statement that the founders worked tirelessly to eliminate slavery. Well, you got George Stephanopoulos, the genius midget there, who really doesn't know anything. What I would have said right off the bat was, so, George, first of all, I want to get this straight. You're going to tell us that you know American history, yes or no? And he's going to go, of course I know American history. Good. So when it got to the end where he said finally to Michelle Bachmann, so you're going to stick to that our founders worked tirelessly. And I would say yes, and you're going to stick to that you know American history? First of all, the founders fought over that issue. There was no way the southern states would have joined the Union. So it was a way to create a union without tackling a subject that would have never allowed the Union. Second of all, with the Declaration of Independence and Thomas Jefferson referring to unalienable rights given to us by God, all men are created equal. He laid the groundwork to end slavery. In his second administration, he proposed a constitutional amendment. This is Thomas Jefferson, our third president, proposed an amendment to the Constitution to eliminate slavery. But he couldn't get the Congress or the Senate to work on it and move it. He couldn't get him to do it. He had, as powerful as he had been in the beginning, he probably should have tried it in his first administration. But again, we had a very fragile union back then. We had northern states that were looking for any excuse to get out. Now, the slavery issue wouldn't have been one for them. But so we've got these folks out there that are supposedly journalists, and then they bring up supposed facts, just as you said, Karen, but they lie. And that's why we have a little segment on this show called Debbie, What's Your Next Lie, Schultz. Now, she's been quiet because she's put out so many lies in the last few weeks that they've told her to lay low. But the instant she opens her mouth again, we'll be ready to jot down notes and tell you the lies that she's telling us.
Well, the problem is that our history has been erased. And if you go back and you look at exactly what you said, now wonder why that's not being taught. Well, the party that was in place that was trying to abolish slavery evolved into the Republican Party.
Precisely.
And the party that was in place that was promoting slavery evolved into the Democratic Party.
Precisely.
So the Democrats can't go back and say, well, let's look at history, because everybody would say, wait a minute, you were in favor of slavery? I thought the Republicans were. So they've taken out the history, and they're not giving any reference points because they don't want you to know.
Exactly.
And
well, you know Franz Cabreau,
online.
Correct? Have you met Franz
Absolutely.
Cabreau?
Absolutely. Wonderful,
yeah.
Yes. Wonderful,
yeah, well, I'm
going
to plug him. We plug him frequently on the show. Go to usaradionetwork.com, our website, and we've got a link there to his website where you can buy his book, Stolen History. If you want to find out the true nature of the Democrat Party, the party of slavery, the party of anti-civil rights, Franz can tell you all about that in his book, and he's about to come out with another book, and I don't really know much about the book, but when he gets that out, we will be promoting that on the show, but you got to get that. If you think the Democrat Party is the party of civil rights and human rights, they are not. They're the party of the Ku Klux Klan and slavery, and they've been that way right up until the 60s, where they decided, you know what, instead of harassing blacks, the population is
yep.
growing. We need to get them on board with us. So they've been lying to the black community ever since and saying that they're trying to help them. They have no desire to help them whatsoever, not even the black leaders
well,
in the black community.
The entitlement programs were really put in place to keep the blacks in place.
Yeah.
And that was the education that they gave. And what happened was the blacks were educated. I taught in New York, in Brooklyn, and the blacks were educated. Now, I didn't do that, but this was what was being presented to them as far as entitlement programs. Have kids and the government will take care of you. Have kids
yep.
without fathers and the government will take care of you. So kids
yep.
were having kids so that they could get the government stipend, which all it did was make them slaves because they couldn't further their education, they couldn't do anything. And the students that realized that this is wrong and then became educated and broke away from that mold. I have a friend who is black, and we talk about this all the time. And he believes, like Franz, the worst thing that was done was black Americans, African Americans. We are Americans. Who cares
right.
what color you are? That's irrelevant.
Let me add something
to this,
please.
It's the only way to divide us.
Yeah. Go ahead, Dick.
There's a black fella that has gone around to a number of the 9/12 groups and has talked to them. I can't recall his name. I know Tom knows who he is.
It's Franz Cabreau.
Franz Cabreau.
Franz Cabreau. Yeah, we just promoted him a few minutes ago there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And his book, Stolen History.
After one of the meetings, I walked up to him and I said, "Who is a slave today?" And he looked at me and I said, "Every man, woman, and child on welfare. Every
exactly.
one of them are slaves."
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
And he agreed
with
me.
And the other thing, he is 100% right. And the other thing that people don't realize, if anybody would read anything about Frederick Douglass, he was one of my favorite statesmen. And the thing that he always used to say was he was a slave, and he was self-taught, and he learned to read. And what he... And I always made my kids read his work because the most important thing that he said was, unless a man can read, he will always be a slave. So why do you think we do not teach English in America? Because when you have to take a piece of work and somebody is interpreting it for you, then you are a slave to their interpretation. You cannot make the choice yourself. So the worst thing that we can do, or the left, the best thing that they can do is say, "Well, keep Spanish, keep Asian, keep this, keep that." They don't want the people to be educated in English. Why? Because English is the language of money. English is the language of business. English is the language of finance. English is the language that is most universally known for almost every important documentation that we have available. So if I don't teach you English and you're stuck speaking Spanish and I say sign here because it says the sky is blue and you're signing to say that the sky is green and falling, you're not going to know. So you
right.
are always going to be a slave unless you know how to read. And that's why they don't want the kids to know how to read.
Yeah. Well, we just saw that the president of North Korea has taken all of the students out of the universities and sent them out to work on the farms and factories because that's where they're needed, not to learn anything. And so there's an extreme example of a highly centralized government, let alone a dictatorship, that controls everybody. But everybody's the same. Everybody's the same. They're all equal. They all have a share of the pie. There is no pie, but they all have a share of the pie. I was just down in Caracas, Venezuela, and I'm sorry to report that Hugo Chavez is in a hospital in Cuba, and he's been in serious condition. You know, we hope for the best for him. Like, in other words, he goes away. But who knows who will replace him in Venezuela? You know, it'll be some other military.
Right.
The military's got a pretty big stranglehold there. But, you know, when you go into the airport, there are guys that look like porters standing there. And if you wink at them, they'll head on over toward the edge of the terminal as you're about to go outside the door, and you can exchange dollars for 8 bolivarians. Or, well, I don't remember. Bolivianos, yeah. Bolivianos. If you go to the hotel or go get bolivianos out of an ATM, you're going to get 4 per dollar. The black market for dollars there is huge, and the government has suppressed the value of their currency. They don't want inflation to take off. The other thing about Venezuela is, you know, he promised everybody milk and bread. All the poor people get milk and bread. Whenever they go to the grocery store, it's free, free, free. Only problem is the grocery store doesn't always have it. So when you show up at the grocery store asking for your allotment of milk and bread, well, we don't have it today, come back tomorrow. And I've seen big, big long lines at the grocery store on bread and milk day waiting for that stuff. So, you know, everybody's taken care of. All this stuff about it, everybody's taken care of. These liberals in our country that think they're going to find this utopia where we're all the same and there's no prejudices, which they keep alive for this purpose, and the government just takes care of everything, has never happened anywhere and never will happen. They're deluded. They're incompetent. They don't know what they're talking about. They're ideologues and typically I hate to say it, but, you know, educators or people that just haven't been out in the real world doing anything real other than having their nose in a book. And apparently they don't like our national history, our constitutional history, our history of our founders and the people that made this country great. They like books on things that have never been attained. And so that's really the problem we're facing today with these folks. And you're right, they lie, and we point out the liars frequently on here. We had a nice show about global warming and pointed out what a liar Al Gore is, outright bold-faced liar in his movie, and we will continue to do that.
Well,
let me tell you
about
a short story that's true.
Go right ahead, Dick.
As Tom knows, I'm a retired police officer. When I was going through the academy, a man going through with me, his name was John Light. He was the sheriff of Cook County, Minnesota. Cook County, Minnesota is all white. John is the only black man in the whole county, and he was elected the sheriff. Towards the end of our training, a group came in, a black group, telling us how nasty police are to the black population and how we have to change and have more sensitivity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. John raised his hand, and they said, "Yes, brother, have you got something to say?" John stood up and said, "Yes, I do. My name is John Light. I am the sheriff of Cook County. As you can see, I'm black. I'm married to a French Canadian. To you boys, that's a white woman. I have been from the northern tip of Minnesota to the southern tip of Texas, and I have never been harassed by a policeman with my white wife because I carry myself like a man." And he walked off to a standing ovation.
That is phenomenal. And that's what's being stripped out of our education. People are not being taught that they have a self-worth. They're not being taught that they have self-reliance. They're not being taught that they have to learn. They must be the ones that learn and filter the information and must be able to protect themselves. You know, what's the first thing they say when you're on an airplane? If we're in a trouble and the oxygen comes down, put the mask on yourself first and then worry about your child. Why? There's a reason for that. It's the same thing with anything else. If you yourself have self-worth, you have self-respect, then you can impart with others. You can't do that if you have no self-worth, if you have no self-respect, if you have no self-preservation. You don't know how to give information to others. And that's what we're promoting in our society today. We're promoting a group of people that have no self-worth, no self-reliance, and that's why this political correctness is so important to them, because the ability of that, of a black man to say to a white man, let's have a conversation, let's talk about race, let's talk about this. You can have a conversation like that. However, not if you are involved in this utopian whatever where everybody's the same. There are no barriers, there are no differences. Well, that's not true. That's absolutely not true. And unless we go back and we look at history and then begin to learn about our history and learn what's happening, we're not going to go anywhere. And that's what education and the website and Agenda 21 and shows like yours are so important, because we have to get people thinking again. And that has been stripped away from us. All of our information comes in a two-minute soundbite, and if it's beyond 2 minutes, nobody pays attention. How sad is that?
Right.
How ridiculous is that?
People need to look for the truth and not rely on CNN soundbites.
To attend to. Karen, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. You have fantastic information.
Yeah, thank you, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And
tell us one more time, Karen, how people can find out more about this information, where they need to go on the Internet to find out more.
Go to agenda21today.com. Start reading, and start reading the links, and start learning where you can, you know, find out all of this information, and sign up for our newsletter, and be in touch. And that's very important. Join a group and start discussing. Talk about politics. Talk about religion. And most important, talk about financial information. And anytime you're up against one of these groups, financial information, financial information, financial information.
Well, you guys have laid the groundwork to educate people so they can go to a county commission meeting or a city commission meeting and ask the right questions to put them on the spot and highlight what they're doing to us. And that's what people can – and I see many of the folks that got active, had never been active in supporting candidates or politics or anything a few years ago, that are still doing it in these patriot groups, and they're putting out emails. Okay, we're going to this commission meeting. We're going to that commission meeting. And they're armed with information, and they are making a difference. And that's the key, that just because you don't know much about this, you can join a group and learn – and make a difference. It's not that hard. Would you agree, Karen?
I would agree 100%. That's it. United we stand. That's the whole key, folks. United we stand. It's wonderful. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. And
thank
I
you,
appreciate
Karen.
The opportunity. Take care.
All right,
have a wonderful
week. You take care, Karen. Thanks for coming on the show. Dick, thanks for joining us again. We know you got to run also. And we'll see you again, my friend. Okay, bye, Ann. I guess it was his wife, Ann, that was still there. Okay, so they're gone now. Paula, it's just you and me, and are you ready? We've all been waiting for this. Well, I've probably been waiting for it more than anybody, but we've all been waiting for the rule of law and Commander Garcia returns from the future. You got your seatbelt on, Paula?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Government via the rule of law creates a society out of groups of people that generally have common goals and interests. It establishes boundaries and limits for society so that its citizens may enjoy a more stable and secure environment to live in. And for the first time in history, our Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, established boundaries and limits for government. The U.S. Constitution is the rule of law that our representative government is expected to live by when making laws for society to live by. Virginia Republicanism, which is, and we haven't got anybody calling or telling me, so it's too late now, sorry, because I'm going to let the cat out of the bag. Virginia Republicanism was in large part the reason Thomas Jefferson was elected president. And according to Henry Adams, author of The History of the United States, 1801 to 1809, Virginia Republicanism believed if the government, either in its legislative, executive, or judicial departments, or any combination of them, could define its own powers in the last resort, then its will and not the letter of the Constitution was law. And thus, the essence of Virginia Republicanism lay in a single maxim. The government shall not be the final judge of its own powers. Now, we could learn a little something from that today. And as a bit of a side note, but it's not so much a side note, because you're going to see how important it comes in here as we look at future legislation and judicial rulings over the next 15 years. Equally important to our rule of law, Adams noted, to this axiom of republicanism, the Federalist, who are today's Democrats, the Federalist judiciary opposed what amounted to a flat negative. Chief Justice Marshall and his colleagues meant to interpret the Constitution as seemed to them right, and they admitted no appeal for their decision. Now, this is a time where the author, James Madison, now Secretary of State under Thomas Jefferson, and many others, founders, that were there and wrote the Constitution. They knew exactly the purpose of the Constitution, exactly, precisely the purpose of the Constitution and what it meant. And yet we had Chief Justice, we had a Supreme Court that was going to rule on interpreting the Constitution as they saw fit. Well, what did they know? They, number one, weren't elected. Number two, they weren't there when it was written. And I'm going to read something to you from Alexander Hamilton about the very subject. He said, the specification of particulars, and he's referring to the 18 enumerated powers in Article 1, Section 8, referring to Congress, evidently excludes all pretension to a general legislative authority. Because an affirmative grant, now I'm going to interpret for people that are, I'm moving fast here, a pretension of general legislative authority. In other words, the Constitution doesn't give Congress general legislative authority. In other words, they can just make whatever laws they want, like most people seem to think. He said, because an affirmative grant of special powers, so we call the enumerated powers, the 18 enumerated powers, the special grant of would be absurd as well as useless if a general authority was intended. So what Alexander Hamilton is saying, this is in the Federalist Paper 83, if we intended to give the federal government the authority to just do whatever it wants, then we would have just said that. We wouldn't have given them very specific powers, and we certainly wouldn't have written the 10th Amendment, which says if it's not in here, you can't do it. All right, so that's my little side commentary, but so we'll continue on. So what happens if government does not follow the rule of law established for it? Is government doing it for the greater good and that makes it okay? Or are they doing it for their own benefit? What if society wants government to violate its own rule of law in order to provide something desired by the people? We see that all the time today. Liberals, left and right, want the federal government to violate the Constitution because there's something they want. In order to answer these questions, we're going into the future and observe the results of government operating outside the document designed to protect society, us. So, as we arrive in 2030, we immediately go online and download major federal legislation and judicial rulings since 2012. Plenty of things catch our eye, and here they are. March 4th, 2014, Congress passes H.R. 4590, the Healthy Life and Affordable Food Act. It's a nice-sounding title, but we discover it has 3,800 pages. We don't have time to read that, so we're going to read the executive summary, part of the executive summary. Here we go, Paula. You tell me if any of these things sound familiar. The price of food has skyrocketed, and the number of people on food stamps has quadrupled since 2011. Children and seniors are going hungry. It is estimated that 70 million people, I didn't say Americans, people in the U.S. are eating very unhealthy diets. This act will bring the price of food down, reduce rising health care costs from poor diets and malnutrition, and provide all Americans with the opportunity to enjoy a healthy diet. Number two, since we are all paying for these high food costs anyway and subsidizing those who cannot afford to eat, the federal government will now manage the food supply from crop to grocery store. In order to increase competition with the grocery chains, the chains that have escalated food costs to unbelievable levels, the federal government will establish grocery exchanges in each city. The Crop and Grocery Commission will be established to oversee all agricultural practices and grocery store management. This commission will report to the Crop and Grocery Commissioner, who will have final say in establishing necessary regulation. Each family residing in the U.S. will be evaluated by a local nutritionist in the newly established Department of Grocery to determine nutritional needs. A magnetic identification card will be issued to each household, embedded with a predetermined grocery allotment which best meets the needs of each household. Each week, a member of the family can visit their local grocery store or one of the government food exchanges to pick up their weekly allotment of food. The identification card will be swiped at the checkout counter, and a runner will retrieve the groceries and bring them to the checkout lane. Requests for deviations from the predetermined food allotment must be forwarded to the Office of Crop and Grocery Commission no later than 90 days prior to the month requested. Requests will not receive a response if approved. The requested deviation will appear in the grocery allotment for the requested month. Now, that was March 2014. In August 3rd, 2014, 22 states joined a lawsuit initiated by the state of Iowa against the Healthy Life and Affordable Food Act, claiming that the federal government does not have the constitutional authority to tell consumers what they cannot buy. In November of that year, a California Federal Circuit Court judge rules that the government does have the right to tell consumers what they can't buy, since it has previously been established that the government can tell consumers what they must buy, particularly if it's for their own good. The Supreme Court upholds this ruling on the 1st of April, 2015. Now, on February 12th, 2017, this really caught my eye, H.R. 5687, the Healthy Lifestyles Act. This act requires all Americans to purchase a gym membership to ensure optimal health, body weight, and lower the rising costs of health care. Look at that. It's 2017, Paula, and health care just keeps going up. We can't seem to stop it, even though the government controls the health care system. Government gym exchanges will be established to ensure competition and affordability with those evil, you know, private gyms that exist out there. Americans will be required to attend a minimum of 2 weekly workouts where they will be weighed and participate in the exercise activity chosen for them by the local athletic commissioner. Any citizen that does not attend the minimum number of days or meet established weight and performance goals will be penalized a 2% tax on their next annual income tax. From October 2017 to December 2017, 5 states passed laws, state laws, obviously, making participation in the Healthy Lifestyles Act voluntary. On the 13th of February, 2018, a D.C. Federal Circuit Court judge rules that the 10th Amendment was never intended to apply to federal legislation, and on June 12th, the Supreme Court upholds that ruling. The 5 states do not rescind their legislation, but admit that everyone must now participate. On page, 2895, section 389, paragraph 14, exempts members from Congress from having to participate. May 5th, 2021, the Senate passes SB 4450, the American Equality Act. It is believed to be the final step in eliminating racism and discrimination in the U.S. by making everyone appear the same. It will be difficult to distinguish differences, everyone will be much happier. A stylish black unisex uniform will be issued to each American, which will contain a tracking chip for safety purposes, of course, and the logo on the front of a rainbow-colored flag and the words "Proud American." Now, numerous lawsuits resulted from this legislation, but federal circuit court judges in both California and D.C. rule that under the Commerce Clause, since the federal government has the authority to tell people what they must purchase and cannot purchase, it also has the authority to decide what they can and cannot wear. So we will all be wearing the same thing as of 2021. April 15, 2024, a groundswell movement begins with the goal of ousting all incumbents. Liberals join conservatives in supporting grassroots candidates that feel the federal government has just gone too far. By July, polling data shows a landslide of grassroots candidates winning. On August 1st, the president issues an executive order suspending elections. On August 18th, both houses pass the People's Choice Act. Yes, the People's Choice Act, a bill which suspends elections until further legislation is passed. On September 20th, the Supreme Court weighs in and rules that under the Commerce Clause of the Constitution, the federal government has the authority to regulate elections, including suspending, changing the process, or even eliminating them altogether. Have you had enough, Paula?
Sounds like Agenda 21.
Well, it's all where I'm saying we could be going, and we'll talk about this some more, but I could go on, but it's too depressing. Of course, there will be plenty of liberals out there, Paula, I guarantee you right now, that think these are great ideas. Like, Tom, you come up with some great ideas. But most of them would just say, Tom, this will never happen. You're being ridiculous. I've had people tell me, Tom, it'll never happen. Well, to those that believe this could never happen, how many governments have seized more and more power over time with the result of a new dictator, communism, socialism, fascism, or a more repressive, highly centralized government, or even just a new king? Almost all governments in the history of man have ended up this way. So the odds are in favor of a progression of events like this. The odds are on my side when it comes to this, not that I want this to happen, versus the liberals who would say, oh, Tom, it'll never happen. You're just being stupid. Well, if I'm being so stupid, let's take a look at recent history in the U.S., and we've got some sound bites coming up. You're going to like these. If I told you in 2008 that President Obama would use military force to effect a solution in a civil war in the Middle East, you libs would have told me, Tom, this will never happen. In fact, even the president would have told me this in 2008. And in fact, he did on January 2007. Let's take a listen to that soundbite.
We cannot impose a military solution on what has effectively become a civil war.
Let's listen to it again.
We cannot impose a military solution on what has effectively become a civil war.
Wow. That's what he said, right? You can't do it. Except now we're using the military to oppose a solution in the civil wars of Libya and Yemen. So if I told you in 2008, Paula, and particularly liberals, that the president was going to do this, the president himself would have said, no, I'd never do that, Tom. That'll never happen. And yet it's happened. So when you liberals say it'll never happen, it happens all the time. Well, let's take a look at another one. How about in 2008? If I told you President Obama would get the Democratic Congress to spend almost $1 trillion on shovel-ready jobs that don't exist, but he'll tell us they exist. Once again, you libs will tell me, oh, Tom, that'll never happen. Even the president would have told me this. In fact, he did tell us this. Well, let's go see what he told us. Here's a sound clip of President Obama back in, I believe, 2008, talking about shovel-ready jobs.
I think we can get a lot of work done fast. When I met with the governors, all of them have projects that are shovel-ready. We've got shovel-ready projects all across the country. Shovel-ready projects, rebuilding our roads, our bridges. We are seeing shovels hit the ground. Shovels are breaking ground. There are almost 100 shovel-ready transportation projects already approved in Colorado, which are beginning to create jobs.
Wow. Shovel-ready. It's a fact, Tom. You're wrong. The president's not lying to us. He's telling us the truth. Shovel-ready, shovel-ready, shovel-ready. You would have said, Tom, it's never going to happen what you're talking about. The shovel-ready jobs are... Well, let's see what happened. In New York Times Magazine article in 2010, President Obama admits there's no such thing as shovel-ready projects. And more recently, in a Jobs Council meeting, let's take a look, listen to what he had to say in that, in the Jobs Council meeting about shovel-ready jobs.
Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected. Shovel-ready was not as... shovel ready as we expected.
Wow. Shovel ready. Really not. It's pretty funny, isn't that, Paula? Isn't that that we just put our children another $1 trillion in debt and he laughs about it? He laughs about it. And yet he told us with all certainty, shovel ready, shovel ready, shovel ready. And people back then would have said, Tom, you don't know what you're talking about. You just don't know. Well, so again, back to our story. When people say, Tom, that'll never happen, you know what? It's really, this story is not about will it happen or will it not happen? So let me continue on. There are too many examples throughout history of things that no one expected. The real question is, how will you stop this from happening? The answer can't be rely on the Constitution, because it's the very thing that liberals hate. It's the thing that they're always looking to get around. It's the thing that they'd like to eliminate. They tell us it's a breathing, living document. Well, if it's breathing, living document, a fluid document, then there is no rule of law. We talked about rule of law in the beginning. If I can change it tomorrow, not I, but if whoever can change the Constitution tomorrow, whether it be through the amendment process or really the interpretation process, whether the president reinterprets it and says, I'm now going to war in Libya and you can't stop me because I think the Constitution gives me authority. Or if we have justices that rule that, oh no, this is what the Commerce Clause really means, and do that from week to week to week, there is no rule of law. We're just altering it to meet whatever we want to happen today. So for liberals out there, if government goes too far, don't rely on the Constitution, because you pretty much already destroyed it. Okay? So what's the next answer? Well, the usual answer, Paula, is, and you know this one, vote them out of office. You've probably heard people say that. Vote them out of office. Really? That's brilliant. Does anyone out there believe that a government that has gone too far won't use its power to stay in power? Just look at the Middle East today. We've got bloody revolutions going on all over the place. Is this the progressive solution if government goes too far? Is this the preferred method to restrain government? A bloody revolution? Here's the bottom line on liberals. They don't have a plan. They want to destroy the one document that is meant to protect us so that they can get their things done today without regard to the future. And then when it has gone too far, the solution is a bloody revolution. I've had people say to me, well, Tom, then people will rise up. We're witnessing people rising up in the Middle East, and what's the result? Death and bloodshed left and right, thousands and thousands of people dying. Why should we have to do over what our founders did for us? Why should we have to give those lives to do something that's already been done for us? So here's the truth, Paula. Liberalism is akin to selling one's soul to the devil. We know what we want today and don't care much about the future. We're willing to give away liberty and protection from evil. And as we've seen in the movies where the devil has tricked someone into thinking they're getting one thing when in fact they're not, they're getting something else. An example, I want to be a rock star. I want to be the most popular rock star for as long as I live. No matter what I'm playing, no matter where I'm going, the devil says, no problem. Give me sign over your soul. There you go. Oh, by the way, you're dying tomorrow. But wait a minute. You said for as long as you live. You know, I'm live up to my end of the bargain. This is liberalism, selling their souls. But their problem is they're selling our souls as well. They're destroying this country. They're destroying it because we're taking the document that is the shield of protection for us, and we're picking it apart, reinterpreting it, so it has no meaning. And that goes back to the beginning where I talked about the rule of law. The rule of law creates a society with boundaries and limits. It does create society. There is no society when there's no government. We create governments to create a society. And then we decide as a society or groups of people that are forming a society what kind of government we want. If we want a king, that's what we want. And the rule of law will be he tells us what we do. But when you form a government like ours where the rule of law is we tell the government what it can and cannot do. We are in charge. We manage the government. That's the kind of government liberals don't want. They want a government that tells us what to do and manages everything for everybody. As a retired Top Gun fighter pilot, the liberal belief that we don't need shackles on government is as absurd as me believing that I don't need weapons on my jet when I go into combat. It's equally disturbing that they're quite willing to cast aside the Constitution, the armor, the protection for some unattainable utopia that nobody's ever attained and will never attain. So my final words on this are, when the rule of law is not followed, lawlessness follows. Power corrupts, and the corrupt bear no allegiance to anyone. Now, the good news is we can make a difference today. We can start electing officials before they decide to shut down the election process that believe in the Constitution, that believe in the rule of law, that want to follow and will follow the rule of law. We have many lawmakers that are like that, but we have too many that aren't. And the problem is the ones that don't want to follow the rule of law, that don't want to be restrained by the people and by the Constitution and the government that we established, they will lie to us on a daily basis to stay in power and to achieve more power. That is the problem with the liberal mentality of trying to achieve a utopia that cannot be achieved. They will lie to us to achieve it. And then when we have it, unless they're one of the elites in charge, in power, they'll be crying the blues like the rest of us. Gee, I never thought this would happen. Yeah, and you never thought Obama would start two more wars. And you never thought Obama would spend $1 trillion on non-shovel-ready, quote, shovel-ready jobs. You never thought that. You've been wrong too many times. It's time to join us and start doing something right. So there we have it. And I'm not going back to the future again because I don't want to see that kind of ugliness. I want to stay here today and try and turn around what we're doing, turn the ship around and get it headed the right direction to preserve our liberty, our personal property rights, and the Constitution. So what do you think, Paula?
Amen, brother. You've determined, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Founding Fathers established the Constitution to establish a federal government for the United States of America, correct?
Yes.
And to delegate the federal government certain limited and enumerated powers, correct?
Exactly.
Okay. So that being said, the Constitution does not give us rights.
God gave us rights, absolutely. Doesn't give us any rights.
Natural rights. We are all born with our rights. But the Constitution does protect our rights by limiting the powers of government, by granting it only those specific powers that are listed in the Constitution. But effective as of late, this has not yet been proven. Is that fair to say?
I'm sorry, say that again. What hasn't been proven?
It's not proven as of late that limiting the powers of government by granting it only those specific powers that are listed in the Constitution.
Well, it has been proven because we went through a long period of history where government was fairly small and was not abusing its power. But even at the very beginning, we had Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, that recognized that the Necessary and Proper Clause was ripe for abuse, that the General Welfare Clause, quite honestly, they never considered the Commerce Clause was going to be the catch-all to be able to, for the federal government to do everything. But if it had, if the government were to follow it, then we would have the closest thing to utopia, and that is liberty and freedom. But here's the part about it. Everybody thinks, well, the federal government, that's our government. No, that's a government that is designed to protect our liberty and to protect the individual sovereign states. Our states now, on the other hand, are the governments that are supposed to handle civil and social issues. You want to get married and you're gay, go to New York. You know, but if you don't believe in that and you're offended by that, you can go live in another state. But if the federal government makes all of these social and civil decisions for us, you got nowhere to go except leave the country. And on that little note, and we can come back to this if you want to talk about that some more, but I want to plug our friend Nick Taxia. He did a thing on today on gay marriage. Here's what he said. And, you know, he's a satire guy from Progressive. Go to duprogressive.com. That's duhprogressive.com. Nuclear missiles fly towards U.S. as gay marriage debate rages. So, you know, Iran's been testing its nuclear long-range missiles. It said, nuke missiles only minutes away from obliterating the nation. Americans ignore pending Armageddon to find same-sex marriage consensus. We can hide from the nuclear destruction when we – how can we hide from nuclear destruction when we can't even hide from our own prejudices, asked one supporter. The president, in an emergency address to the nation, ordered all Americans to find a mutually accommodating consensus on same-sex marriage as soon as possible and then seek shelter or their closest Unitarian chapel to protect themselves from the reigning nuclear death only minutes away. One of the protesters said, like most Americans, St. Louis – I'm just reading this now. Like most Americans, St. Louis activist Lauren Baxter and her partner Bernadette remain undaunted by the pending nuclear holocaust from China, Iran, Russia, and North Korea, remaining instead to slug out the gay marriage struggle to the bitter, blazing, radioactive end. He did another really funny one. I laughed so hard today. Let me find it. It's McDonald's Momar McDaffy burger ruining Independence Day. Apparently, McDonald's has come out with a new burger that looks like Colonel Gaddafi. And I'm telling you, it is the funniest looking thing. First of all, it's a hilarious photo of Gaddafi. He looks like, I don't know, but the burger looks just like him. It is so hilarious. So you got to go to duprogressive.com and check out those stories. You don't want to miss those. Let's see. So that's a plug for Nick, and we will not be doing a show on Monday, the 4th of July. No show on Monday. Everybody have a great time celebrating our Independence Day, the Declaration of Independence, and the Constitution. Don't forget what got us here, and also our troops. We've got troops over fighting and doing things that they are doing a great job at, and protecting our personal liberty and freedom, and they're making huge sacrifices as well as their family. So keep all those folks in mind. And Paula, what else?
Let's see. New York Times today had a piece about Obama mentioning that Republican leaders must bend on taxes.
We talked about it. Absolutely. He's blaming the Republicans for, you know, not coming up with a debt plan or a budget or whatever sooner. And I'm thinking, you're the guy that was the leader of your party that was completely in charge in the last congressional session that didn't even do a budget.
He wants them to do the right thing.
Yeah, he wants them to raise taxes. That's the right thing. But he doesn't ever talk about cutting the size of government. We had Karen reiterating some of the things that I usually am talking about on cutting these wasteful bureaucracies and departments in the executive branch that give us no return on investment and are only indoctrinating our children or putting abusive regulation on businesses, which is keeping this economy down. He never talks about cutting them because he doesn't want to. He wants to keep us in this state. The problem is to get reelected – to keep us in a state that he really wants us to, in a recession, high gas prices, unemployment, et cetera, that's kind of a tough thing to convince the American people. I mean, this guy's going to have to be a magician. How do you convince the American people that this is great? Being worse off than, 4 years ago is a great thing and you should reelect me. Well, he can't say that. That would be the truth. But what he has to say is, lies. He's going to lie. I've predicted this, and I've told you this many times, Paula. We're going to see him and his party lie daily, and they're going to be bold-faced, outright lies. It's going to happen daily, daily, daily. And we've already seen some of that. You know, one of the articles I saw that his campaign signals fundraising failure, that they're not raising the kind of money they wanted to, and they're having some trouble there. Gee, I wonder why. The National Journal, it's kids versus – this is what he did. Remember, we did a show where I talked about how the president uses comparisons that aren't valid comparisons. And there was an article that somebody had written about that whole thing. But here we go. It's rich versus poor. It's us versus them. None of that has any applicability to what's going on in our country. You know, those who support children, food safety, medical research, and presumably puppies, and apple pie versus the rich fat cats who don't. The rich fat cats, well, who are they? It must be the oil companies. Yeah, let's take away their tax breaks. They got tax breaks like any other manufacturing sector companies do. But let's take them away. Well, they have a profit margin. They're going to get the profit margin, which is 10%, and so they're going to pass on the loss of those tax breaks to us, the consumer. So gas prices will go up. But he's in a pinch, you know. He can't make the gas prices go up too much. So anyway, you know, that one caught my eye. He's going to pit community against community, people against people. He's going to be playing the race card left and right. He's going to be playing the poor card. He's going to be playing the old people's card. I saw an ad on TV today, old people talking about how Republicans are about to pass a bill that's going to cut funding from Social Security and Medicare. If I'm not wrong, Paula, if I'm correct, I think it was Obamacare that cut $573 billion, so almost, you know, over $500 billion out of Medicare. Taking it away from seniors, putting it into Medicaid, giving it to poor people / illegal aliens. So how is it that when the Democrats pass law, actual law, that takes money from seniors, nobody says a thing? But if the Republicans are proposing reforming it for future seniors, nobody that's a senior today are going to be one anytime soon, all of a sudden they're cutting seniors' health care today. Lies, lies, lies. They're just going to continue to lie, lie, and lie again. That's what they do. So we've got to cut through all the lies. Well, we've gone pretty long today, Paula. Thanks for hanging in there with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
It was fun again. And we will eventually get that Commander Garcia Returns from the Future and the Rule of Law published either on the website or somewhere else, and we'll let everybody know where they can go download that and print it out if they want to, if they so choose. But still a little bit of a progress in work. I need to add a few more things to it, and we'll get there. But I hope everybody enjoyed the show today, and Karen Schoen was a great guest. And, again, I'll give you the last words with the upcoming 4th of July weekend, Paula.
Well, semper fi to the United States Marine Corps serving here at home and as well as overseas. Those of you that are overseas still, your families love and miss you and want you home. We thank you for, you know, fighting for our liberties and freedoms as well as the liberties and freedoms that you're fighting for overseas. Happy 4th of July to all of you.
All right. Well, Paula, you and your family have a great weekend.
You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio.
Hit the wrong button. You have a great 4th of July weekend. I know we will, and we hope everybody out there listening will have a great 4th of July weekend, and we'll see you next week on
Democrats'
Wednesday.
Democrats' position is that we need comprehensive immigration reform.
I can't seem to hit the right buttons today, Paula. I guess it's definitely the end of the week, huh?
Yes, definitely. Enjoy your week.
Well, oh, and I should have promoted that we've got Risa LaRue Kirkland, War Chick. She's going to be on guest hosting for me, Paula, and I'll give you the information on her. But Wednesday, you don't want to miss her. She does a lot of different radio shows as a guest. She's going to get a chance here to be the host, and she's done guest hosting for other people. But she's going to be on Wednesday, and so I'll fill you in all about that. But she's a firecracker, and you don't want to miss that.
All right.
All right. Thanks. I'm going to hit the right button this time. All right. Take care.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.